So it's always interesting when Phil and I sit down to start to plan for the summer. And I have this moment where I realize I get like 4 or 5 weeks to preach on whatever I want. I normally preach once a month, so like having repeated is both intimidating and wonderful all at the same time. And you'd think that would make it easier, but it doesn't. You probably already all know this. I'm learning. The more options you have in life doesn't necessarily always a good thing, is it? When you have the whole Bible before you, it can be hard to figure out where to start. So in a bit of an exercise in discipline, I decided that we're going to stay in the lectionary for the month of July. I think Phil's actually going to stay in it through August as well. But instead, for July, we're going to go someplace in the lectionary we don't very often go around here. Instead of being in the Gospels, the stories of Jesus' life where we often focus, I decided it might be fun for the summer for us to turn to the New Testament letter. And before us this month is actually Paul's letter to a young church he'd never been to yet in Rome. Now, I need to say that before we're all done, we may wonder about the wisdom of that decision. Because any of you who know anything about Romans know it's considered by many to be Paul's theological masterpiece. It is just full of big ideas, and certainly our texts over the next 5 weeks have some of those big ideas in them. But as Phil and I often joke, you know what could possibly go wrong? Leave the kid in charge of Romans, that's a good idea. It is really dense stuff, though, in all seriousness. And it is stuff that many of us may not be that familiar with. And so I'm really actually excited about us exploring it together this summer for a little while. We're going to try to see beyond those big ideas and big words that we heard in our reading to see if we can mine it for the threads that are actually quite familiar to us because they describe our life with God. So I think that's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get to the bigger theme of our reading for today, I want to acknowledge that I think that there actually might have been a few elephants that snuck into the room as I was reading that scripture. This passage is full of words that can be problematic for us. Some of them are loaded with baggage, and that baggage is not all good baggage. And others of them are just complicated. We probably feel like we should know what they mean, but we don't, not really entirely sure we do. You might have been struck by some of these words. I know I was when I first started to work on this sermon. They're words like sin. That one's got a lot of baggage for a lot of us. And slavery. And sanctification. And you know, even righteousness can punch some buttons in us. I think I need to start by saying in the church, we need to admit that there have been times when we have used these words in a manner that was not how God intended. And so because of that, they have in sometimes become kind of emotionally manipulative. For some of us, some of those words might be more associated with a sense of being driven towards Jesus out of fear, rather than being drawn to him by his compelling love for us. So in an effort to try to gently usher those elephants back out of the room, I think we should start by unpacking a little bit of that baggage, or at least trying to. And I think the best way to reframe these ideas is actually to put them back in the overall story of God's mission in the world, where they came from in the first place. And to do that, we need to do a bit of big picture thinking. So, are y'all with me? Here we go. This is big picture thinking, but I'm hoping it's helpful. Since the beginning of time, really beginning of time, when God was forming the world and everything in it, God has had a dream for us. It's a dream for life. Not life as we know it now, with all the pain and the struggles, but rather life as God always meant it to be. Now, we're going to do a little visual this morning. This music stand with the nice label Life on it and the beautiful flowers in front of it is going to represent that dream of life that God has for us. In this life, we are going to get to live fully and in complete freedom. All creation is going to be beautiful. That's why I wanted something that represents beauty here. And it's going to be perfect, the way that God always intended for it to be. All the chaos is going to be gone. There will be a deep sense of joy and peace. There will be an order and harmony that itself brings more and more life. And we are all going to contribute to that flourishing life. We'll do that because we will be living in loving relationships with each other, with God, who is going to be there with us, like God was at the beginning, with creation in its abundance all around us, and even with ourselves. In that dream for life, we will finally be able to love ourselves fully. And in this full and free life, we are each going to find the purpose and the significance and the security that we all long for. I can't really do it justice by trying to describe it with words, but I do hope maybe something in what I have said might have caught that longing that I think we all have in our hearts, that one day life might really be like that, fully. It's a pretty big deal. It's actually where we place our hope as Christians. It is the hope we have before us. Now, one of those baggage-laden words, one of those elephants, was the word righteousness. Righteousness is really just a term that describes life like this. That's what we mean by righteousness. It's life the way God dreamed for it to be. Now, as we all know, we're not there yet, are we? We don't get to be here quite yet. Something's gone wrong, and humankind has taken steps that have led us completely in the wrong direction. Instead of living towards that vision for life, we struggle. And we often find ourselves living in a manner that actually takes us further and further away from it. There's many things that cause that to happen. But all those things that prevent us from living towards life are what we mean when we talk about sin. That's what we mean by the word. It's stuff that kind of, instead of having our feet facing in that direction, it turns our feet in the other direction. But in his love, God has promised not to leave us in this mess we're in. God's actually moving to get us to all that God dreams for us to have. All of God's activity in the world since the beginning of history has been about moving us towards the realization of that dream. Now, it's obviously a long and very slow process, because here we are. And it's a process that involves both our world on a grand scale and ourselves as individuals on a personal level. Each of us gets invited by God to take our part in that work God is doing, bringing that dream into a reality. As we each pursue God and God's leading in our lives, in little ways and in big ways, we're actually taking steps that lead us towards that life. We become more and more the people God has always created us to be, people who find ourselves living and loving an awful lot like we see Jesus living and loving. And the process of becoming those people, that's what we mean when we use that big churchy word, sanctification. It's just the process of becoming those people we will become. Now, it's really important to acknowledge that none of us have arrived yet. None of us are where God dreams for us to be yet. We're all works in progress. What is important is that our feet and our hearts and our minds are headed in the right direction towards that promise we have for that life. So that's the bigger picture. I hope that was kind of helpful. It puts, I think, some of those challenging words into a more life-giving context. Now, there was another problematic word in our reading today, that word slavery. Paul used it as a metaphor. Remember, he talks about how we're either slaves to sin or slaves to righteousness. I think we just need to name the problem on this one. In our place and in our time, that language can be really difficult. It's loaded with difficult historical and contemporary connotations for us. In verse 19, Paul actually kind of says in a funny way, he's just using it as a metaphor. He's picked it because he's hoping it will help those young Christians in Rome to understand a dynamic of how their lives have changed since they started to follow Jesus. Now, for the Roman Christians, it may indeed have been a very helpful metaphor. But I do find myself wondering, if Paul had known he would be writing to us here today, at our point in human history, with all that's come before and all that's going on now, I wonder if he would have chosen that metaphor today. He might have chosen to say it in a different way. I'm not going to belabor the slavery metaphor, but I do think it is very, very important that we dig a little bit to try to understand what Paul might have been trying to help us to recognize when he chose to use that. Sometimes I leave a more traditional translation of the Bible and go to a more contemporary translation. Anybody who's sat in ladies' Bible study with me will be familiar with this. Sometimes Eugene Peterson's translation of the Bible, The Message, is actually helpful with things like this, so it's always worth looking at. When I looked to The Message to figure out how he was dealing with this idea of slavery, I discovered he doesn't use that word. He uses the word tyranny instead. The tyranny that can gradually and insidiously destroy our lives as we make decisions that lead us away from that dream that God has for us. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read that word, I found it helpful. I can kind of get this idea of tyranny. I know there are choices I make in my life that lead me further and further away from that dream. And I've noticed, you may have too, that they have a nasty little habit of compounding on you. Either they had implications and repercussions that I never intended, or one little misdirected choice gradually leads to another and another, and before I know it, I have this sinking sense that I've lost my way. I've ended up living in a direction that has taken me further and further from that dream of life that I long for, and especially that God longs for me. So although I am not a huge fan of the slavery metaphor, I have to confess to you that I can kind of get why Paul might have chosen it. Because there is sometimes this sense in all of this that sometimes it just gets bigger than us, doesn't it? Sometimes it feels a bit beyond our control, a little like maybe we are slaves to it. But there is really good news. Paul says it really clearly in verse 18. He doesn't want us to miss this. You have been set free from sin. You have been set free. Please pay very close attention to every word in that statement. You have been set free. The tense is really important. It's past tense. Not you will be set free. You have been set free from everything that can keep you from that dream of life. The distinction of getting that it's have been set free is very, very important, because there's actually life to be found in letting yourself grab hold of that. You have already been set free. No matter how you think, how you feel, what you may or may not have done, you've been set free. I'm not entirely sure that we always remember this. Letting it sink in can really change things for us. I want to share with you a story that kind of illustrates that. I heard it recently. How many of you know who Bono is? Yeah, come on, it's Bono. Hi. For those of you who don't, Bono is the lead singer of the Irish, shout out to Ireland, rock band U2. Now, U2 has arguably, over the last 30 years, become one of the most successful bands of all time. Bono's the lead singer, and for my generation, and even for the generation after me, he's become a bit of an icon. He's had a ridiculously successful music career, and he's leveraged that fame for some very worthy causes. He's been largely the name behind awakening the world to the reality of AIDS and poverty in Africa over the last 20 years. Bono's been a big part of that. So he's a rock legend, amazing singer, songwriter. He's also a renowned humanitarian, and it turns out he's a deep theological thinker. Recently, he has started to work with the faculty at Fuller Seminary down in California. They've been producing some videos, and they're videos that are just kind of these vignettes of Bono ruminating on issues of faith through the lens of the Psalms. He loves the Psalms. In one of these videos, he describes a pilgrimage he and his family went on to Jerusalem, and he talks about something that happened to him on that trip. He says he knew he wanted to go to Golgotha, the place where Jesus was crucified, and just to spend some time there. So they went one day. He describes, as he was trying to absorb the place, being struck by this reality. He says, wow, this is the place where death died. Now, for most of his life, he has probably understood on some level that when Jesus willingly gave his life for us on the cross, the powers of sin and death were in some way defeated. But as you hear him tell the story, and I'll link the video on the website if you want to watch it this afternoon, as you hear him telling this story, you can hear, for some reason, as he stood on that piece of ground, in that real place on our real earth and thought about what had happened there, the reality sunk into a whole new level. This was the place where death died. And then he says that once that happened, something shifted in him. And the way he thought about and the way he approached life began to change. When you hear him describe that experience, you can hear him embracing what Paul is proclaiming in our reading. You've been set free. It happened long before you were born in a real place on this earth when a real person gave their life for you. You got set free. The day Jesus gave his life for us, it was done. That's why in his last breaths, he said, "It is finished." Friends, when we are able to let that truth really sink into us, like we hear in that video, "It Happening for Bono," something does shift. We really begin to be set free. Paul was so passionate about people getting this. It was the foundation for his life. His whole life had changed when he got that. You remember that before he became a Christian, Paul was actually hunting Jesus' followers, having them imprisoned and killed. And one day when he was walking to Damascus to try to round up more Christians and drag them back to Jerusalem for trial, he was stopped right in his tracks when the risen Christ in all of his glory appeared before him. And basically, Diane's paraphrase translation said, "Paul, what are you doing?" And when Paul saw Jesus, he knew he'd been wrong. He'd missed it. Jesus was the one they'd all been waiting for. He was the one who had come to set them free. He was the one they had trusted God would send to lead them to that dream of life. Earlier in Romans, Paul makes it really clear. He says, God does not respond to what we do, but rather we respond to what God does. Friends, in his infinite wisdom, God has not waited for us to get it all figured out. Thank you, Lord. No, God took matters into his own hands. Jesus came to earth and lived on earth, and in his life, he shows us how to live towards that dream of life. That's why we spend so much time talking about how Jesus lived. And when Jesus died, all that stuff that gets in the way of us living towards that, no more power. None. That's what Jesus' death does. And his resurrection? His resurrection is our glimpse, our tangible, historical, really happened, folks, glimpse that one day God is going to bring that dream into a reality. That's why we hold on to the resurrection so tightly. It's our promise. It's our assurance that it's going to come. Now, when we are finally able to accept all of that, and even more, when we can trust it, then we find ourselves beginning to take some steps as we start to live towards that dream of life. When we realize that we have already been set free, that we are the recipients of God's amazing gifts of grace and love, then as Paul says, sin will have dominion over us no more. It's done. Friends, you have been set free.